Hi, everyone, and welcome to the Smell Podcast. I'm your host, Katie Boateng. This month, join me in listening to a conversation with Hannah Dr. Loeb, a journalist, DC native, and person with congenital anosmia. Hannah and I talk about her story growing up living with congenital anosmia, about why we need universal chemosensory testing, and we also discussed several of her articles which are focused on smell in different capacities. I really enjoyed the conversation, so let's jump in and listen to the interview. Hi, Hannah. Welcome to the Smell Podcast. How are you doing today?
I'm good. It's like weirdly warm for November and makes me a little like anxious, but it also is kind of nice that I could walk outside in shorts. So
what part of the country do you live in?
I'm in DC right now. So it's like apparently it was our warmest something or other. I don't know.
Interesting. Yeah, I always love it when it's warm weather, but not too hot. I'm located in Texas now and it's really hot here in the summer. So I'm appreciating that it's only like in the 60s right now.
Nice.
So yeah, thank you so much for joining me today on the Smell Podcast. I want you to start off by telling us a little bit about yourself. So you told us you're from DC, or you said you live in DC now. Where are you from originally?
I'm from DC. So I'm right now in my childhood bedroom. I like to say I'm like a rare DC native because so many people will be like, I'm from DC. And then I ask them where they're from and they're from Maryland usually or Virginia. But yeah, I am from DC. I live in DC right now. I'm still living here, though I tend to travel a lot because my job's remote. I'm a journalist and I was just in Europe and Turkey working remotely from there. So,
oh, wow. That's really cool that you were overseas. Mm-hmm. So I wanted to talk with you today because you have anosmia and I'd like to hear a little bit more about your anosmia story. So what is your background with anosmia?
Yeah. So I like to tell my story. I think it really started when I was at a wastewater treatment plant. I was about 10 years old. I was on a field trip. And I was there with like a bunch of classmates, as you do on a field trip. And for whatever reason, like we were going to the, I still don't know why we were at the plant. Like I think we were learning about like water cycle, whatever. And we were going to see like the areas that I guess like smelled really bad because it's a wastewater treatment plant. And everyone was like so disgusted, so grossed out. And I thought it was the coolest thing ever and was so like interested. And everyone was kind of like, Hannah, like what? You're okay with this? And I was like, yeah, like it's fine. And I guess either I told my parents or my parents, the teachers told them, they're like, something's off. Like something, if she's like okay with a wastewater treatment plant, clearly like something's going on. And so that kind of took my parents, that made them bring me to a bunch of doctors. I remember I went to Mass General because they thought I had Kallmann syndrome, which is a syndrome which is often associated, or anosmia is a symptom. And I just remember being told that if I had Kallmann syndrome, the other symptoms were scoliosis, inability to go through puberty, and then anosmia. And my 10-year-old self thought, like, my bones are going to shrink. I won't have kids. I do not want to have this. Like, ugh, why did this happen to me? Then I got an MRI and it showed I only had half of an olfactory bulb and that I eventually went through puberty, confirmed that I don't have Kallmann's, but I do have anosmia. I think it's congenital and that like I haven't had it since I don't remember having it. There is a part of me that's like, I know that when I was 2, I ran into a radiator. So maybe that was like, maybe I have a TBI. Either way, I haven't had it since I remember. And the olfactory bulb thing is just what I like tell people. I'm like, yeah, I have a quarter of the sense of smell of you. Don't know why. Just a fun fact.
That's fascinating. And so for those who may not know, like a TBI is a traumatic brain injury. So you ran into the radiator?
Yeah, when I was 2. I have like a scar. I like to say it's my Harry Potter scar. You can't see it, I guess, because this is a podcast. But it is because I ran into a radiator when I was 2 and had to go get my brain stitched up, or not my brain, my head stitched up.
So that must have been a little bit nerve-wracking for you, not understanding or not knowing whether or not you were going to get Kallmann syndrome until basically you went through puberty. So you just kind of had to wait it out.
Kind of, yeah. I think it became clear recently, actually, or recently within the past couple of years, I wanted to find out a little bit more. I like studied bio in college and was learning a lot about like the senses and, you know, the molecular like mechanisms of smell, and was curious, like maybe what happened is that like some gene was off. And so I like went back to Mass General, I called them and asked them to send me my genetics because they had done like some kind of genome sequencing. And it looked like the genome sequencing one that they did was specific to like puberty genes, if that makes sense. Like it wasn't really like actually looking at like, oh, the olfactory receptors and those genes or those proteins, whatever, that came up pretty normal. So I think maybe somewhere in there, I didn't remember that, but like they had been like, your genes, your genetics are looking like normal, that you probably don't have this, or like everything's functioning correctly before I went into puberty. But I don't remember that. I just remember being like, got my period, and I was like, this is embarrassing, but like at least now I know like I don't have Kallmann syndrome.
Right. I mean, what a relief to get your period in that
Yeah.
situation, right?
Yeah, exactly.
So you mentioned you're a journalist, that you work remotely and you get to travel, which is really awesome. And that's actually how I learned about you, is through your journalism. So I'd like to talk with you today about a couple of articles that you wrote. And we're going to start off with the first one. But you published it for the Scientific American earlier this year in March of 2023, something titled Smell Loss Tests Could Reveal Health Problems. So I'll link to these articles in the episode notes, but to get started, can you tell the audience what that article is about?
Yeah, that's definitely like a really good one that I wrote. I'm very proud of. And I was also grateful that you talked to me. That's how we first connected officially on the phone. And basically, the article is about this major issue movement in the chemosensory community, which is to get smell tests and just chemosensory tests implemented more widely. You know, many people get their hearing or seeing checked, but no one really gets their smell checked, hence late diagnosis for many people, including myself. And it wasn't the first anosmia piece I wrote, but it was really like another one where I was more. The first one I wrote was in Slate in July of 2022, where I talked to the people who had congenital anosmia like myself. But it was the one that like really felt like I was, it was more of the science and like the bureaucracy of smell testing.
It is surprising to learn for most people that we don't test the sense of smell. I think people just don't think about it. And most of the time they're like, well, why would you test the sense of smell? But as you and I have learned through being in communication with each other, we recently went to a conference called Towards Universal Chemosensory Testing, hosted by the Monell Center, that it's actually really important to have your sense of smell tested for various reasons. So when you were doing this article, and you decided that you were going to write it, what was that research process like for you?
Yeah, so when I did that article for Slate in July of 2022, I had connected with some people at Monell for the first time, including Valentina Parma. I do not remember what her title is, but she's big at Monell, helped organize that conference that we just went to. And she and her colleagues had been working on a test called Sentinel, which is a smell test. It was originally developed as part of basically, a lot of different smell researchers got funding from the government during COVID to create like tests that could screen for COVID. And, you know, before we had the good old, what are they called, antiviral tests or the small like rapid tests, you know, a good way to test for COVID was to just test if you've lost your smell. So they had developed that originally for that. And then she put me in touch with a lot of the key players who developed or are developing other tests, both for smell and taste.
And when you wrote this article, what was your hope that people would get out of it? Like, was it you were hoping they would gain knowledge, or did you have any specific action in mind that you wanted to inspire them to do?
Yeah, I kind of wanted to get people to think a little bit more about it. And I also, what I hope people got out of it differed depending on the audience. For those who are normal smellers, like I really did want them to think a little bit more about it. And for those who are anosmic, I really wanted to give a sense of solidarity. And also, like for those who are anosmic, who didn't know they were anosmic, pointing them in the direction of people working on this. So, you know, there's names that they can then reach out to if they are curious to learn more.
I remember feeling a little stressed when COVID first started, and one of the screening questions to enter into like most public facilities, but especially healthcare settings, had to do with smell. And so when they first started asking the question about smell, I don't know if you remember this too, but it just said, like, have you lost your sense of smell? And I was always like, how do I answer this? Because if I say yes, then they're going to think I have COVID. But if I say no, then I'm kind of lying. So after a while, and I don't know how this happened, but they changed the question. So instead of have you lost your sense of smell, they changed it to say, have you recently lost your sense of smell? And I'm so fascinated to know how that came about. I don't know if you learned anything about that while you were writing your article.
I did not learn anything about that, but I remember having very similar experiences. Specifically, I got back, we were Our college was shut down in March of 2020, but we returned in the fall and we had these tents where we got tested every 3 days. I want to say it was biweekly testing. And before you even go in the tent to get the test, they said, do you lose your sense of smell? Like, do you have a sense of smell? And I just, so that was in, again, the fall. And I just remember saying no. And they looked at me alarmingly and I go, but it's okay because I have a disorder where I can't smell. And she was a little confused, but she did laugh. So they definitely were still asking it in that time. And then I never made that joke again because I just didn't want to alarm people.
Right. And when it was not the, maybe the height of COVID, but it was definitely like, it was still COVID times, was 2021. And I was pregnant with my son and I gave birth to him in April. So it was like late 2020 that I was pregnant and then gave birth in April of 2021. And it was rough going to a lot of doctor's visits and being asked that question every single time because it was a debate. It was an internal debate. Like, do I tell them that I have anosmia? Do I just say no? There's a couple of times where I was just like, no, I'm good. Like, I just didn't answer that question because I didn't want to deal with it. And I don't know if that makes me a bad human or not, but that's what I was doing.
I mean, you knew what they were asking for. I feel like it's fine. Like they were asking a question vague enough, but they were asking with a desired result of they just want to know if you have COVID, which you didn't, hopefully.
Yeah. And so the next article that you wrote was actually written for Undark, and you published that one in September of this year, 2023. And it's called The Study of Smell Loss Still Struggles for Support. So for everyone who's listening, what is that one about? I think the title kind of gives it away, but could you go into detail with it?
Yeah, this article, I was really glad I got to write it because it really was based on a theme I just kept coming across when talking to the researchers, which is this idea. I originally called it like the boom and bust cycle of anosmia research, and then a lot of researchers were like, I mean, that's kind of dramatic. And I was like, okay, fair. But basically, like the pandemic did shed a light on anosmia, but now a few years in, although there's been tons of advances by a lot of different people, both in the smell research community and others, it's not like it's solved. And it's also not like it's still the infra, and I can elaborate more on this, but like the research that's happening is very much siloed to COVID research, which is awesome, great. You know, there's a lot more anosmics, but there's also still people like you and I who have anosmia, and differing levels of like what we can do and what kind of treatment is available for us based on like the genesis of our condition. But yeah, this I had been really wanting to tell this story, but I did not know how. And then I basically back in March, I saw a tweet from a researcher talking about how his grant got denied because the reviewer didn't think that anosmia was crucial to human health. And a little light bulb went off in my head, like this might be the way to tell a story. Like this is a clear narrative. And so I bookmarked it. And back in June, I decided to reach out to the researcher and get a sense of what happened. And it was clear it was a story, and I centered it around him, but also went back to Parma, other researchers, other anosmics to kind of see what they had to say.
Yeah, and for this one, it sounds like you were able to get connected with different researchers through social media, which is really cool. Was there anything about writing this one that surprised you? Like, did you learn anything that was surprising?
I think it gave me a lot of jumping off points for other articles that I want to look into and other areas in this realm. For one, parosmia, the distorted sense of smell, is just so fascinating, and researchers are really just starting to crack the code about why this happens. I also think, and this is somewhat related to like the original, or not the original, but the other article from Scientific American, which is that I think I have a bias in that I focus a lot on smell, but you know, taste is just as like is even not worse off, but like really not a lot of people are thinking about taste. It's harder to create taste tests. And that's why when we went to that conference 2 weeks ago in Philly, it was great to see both like smell and taste because they are pretty well connected in terms of like tasting and smelling create the perception of flavor and like, yeah.
Absolutely. So what was really cool about that conference is there were a couple of like exhibitor booths, and one of the booths, the gentleman there gave me a taste strip. So there was like and I can't even think of his name right now, but he gave me like a little kit where you can actually put like the taste in, like the taste strip in your mouth and figure out like do you actually have a sense of taste or not? And like I know that I can taste basic taste. But like it was kind of cool to have it confirmed. And I've shared many times on this podcast that like I never had an actual smell test for like almost a decade after I lost my sense of smell. So I guess I lost my sense of smell in 09, 2009. And so 2023 is the first time that I actually took a taste test to confirm. So like 9 years to get a smell test, about 14 years to get a taste test, which is wild. But it did confirm for me that I can taste basic tastes. And it was interesting because he was like, this one that he gave me was like the most highest level of sour. And I was like, that's like mildly sour to me. So right there, that showed me like, oh wow, it's like it is affected. Like my level of perception is affected, but I'm still able to perceive it, which was kind of cool.
Yeah, I did not do the taste test. Multiple people kept offering me smell tests, and I just kept being like, I'm really sorry, but I'm not gonna take this because it and one of them was like, take it home with you, give it to someone you know. And I was
Oh
like,
my
all
gosh.
right. I
Right,
was a little
right.
bit like, okay, sounds good. My dad has it in his carol now. But yeah, I always do get the question, like, can you like immediately I say I can't smell, they say, can you taste? And I go, I'm pretty sure I can. And I took this class called Chemical Senses in college that was about like literally the chemical senses, which if you don't know are smell, taste, and then there's other things that fall into those areas, including like chemosensation, which is basically sensing using like similar molecules or similar receptors in the body. So you have chemoreception in like your stomach for you have taste receptors there. And I just remember learning about the difference between like perception and sensation. And that really like clicked it for me. I was like, yes, I sense it. I put things on my tongue and they transduce some signal. Just my perception is different than what it's going to
Right,
be. And
right.
anyone's perception is different too. And it also goes into like, what's the difference between taste and flavor? And flavor tends to be more of that like connection between smell and taste. And then also like, there's this thing called the trigeminal system, which
Yep.
I've realized now I think I have some functionality because I used to say I can smell mint and I can smell ammonia. And then I learned that those are two things that activate the trigeminal system. So I don't think I can actually smell those.
Right, but they still make your nose tingle.
Exactly.
Yeah, I get that. Yeah, for sure. But it's not smelling technically. Interesting. Would you, oh man, I wish you would have taken the taste test while you were there.
Maybe I'll message them.
Yeah, would you be interested in getting like your taste and flavor tested just for your own knowledge?
Probably. I really didn't think about it. Like, I feel like it's interesting whenever I explain to people that I don't have a sense of smell, they're like, oh, like, how do you lose it? And I'm like, well, I never had it to begin with. And I think that,
Right.
like, navigating the world in that respect is interesting because I'm like, I never really knew what I lost. And so it's not as, I don't want to say it's not as big of a big deal. Like, it is like my fun fact. You know, I talk about it a lot. It's a huge personality trait of mine. But I do not feel the same way as other people who've like know what smelling's like. I've just never had
So one thing I like to ask people that I interview for the podcast is about like your funniest, or maybe it's not funny, but your most memorable anosmia experience. So you talked about like the wastewater treatment plant when you were younger, is when you like figured out that there was something going on. But do you have any other funny or any other memories that stick out to you regarding your anosmia?
Yeah, I mean, like every other anosmic, I feel like who, I've burned a bunch of stuff, like pretty common experience. That's no fun. Trying to think of something unique. When I was in fourth grade, we had pet mice. I don't really know why we did, but we did. And we decided that we'd keep them in my room because I couldn't smell the poop, which was fine. But I can hear, and those mice were always on the wheel. So eventually we did move them out because. Not because of the smell, but because they were like always on the wheel at night and I could not sleep. But that was like, and I always say that, like, I worked as a camp counselor for a while and I'd always be like, I can take care of the pee, I could keep care of the, t take care of the throw up. Like, I'm fine. It's like a little bit of a superpower that I can do those things.
Yeah, absolutely. I when my son was born, those things didn't bug me at all, which was it was a perk, absolutely, for not having a sense of smell. So I'm curious to know how you feel about disability and anosmia. So do you personally self-identify as having a disability?
It's a good question. I honestly had never really thought about it until I did my Slate article where I talked to someone who was basically like, yeah, it's a disability. I have a National Parks disability card. And I was like, oh, I never really even thought about that. And by definition, like a disability is something that impairs your ability to do certain activities. And my inability to smell definitely affects my cooking. I just cooked Friendsgiving for Friendsgiving last night. And I brought the food and I was like to my friend, I was like, can you tell them like I can't smell? And so if like the food tastes bad, that's why. Like, please tell them ahead of time because I'm nervous. Wanted to blame
Right.
my it was a new recipe, so I wanted to just blame it on my inability to smell. And like, it is a matter of safety. I think it's totally fair for people to use the word disability to describe anosmia. I'm not personally sure where I land on it. I'm still like in the like mix. Sometimes when I fill out forms, I always go back and forth about whether to mark myself as having a disability, and I usually don't. But if I was applying to a cooking show or something, I definitely would. If that makes any sense, like the context in that, like if I was doing something where I would need smell and I couldn't. I wrote this story. This is not related. I mean, it is related to smell, but I wrote the story for Insider, which is about my experience going to a dining in the dark restaurant. And I pitched it to her and she's like, this is great. Awesome. Like, yeah, go. And then I was like, wait a second, I need to tell you I can't smell. Like, will that impact my, you know, like how is that okay? And she was like, oh yeah, that's fine. So in that respect, like I'll disclose it if it's relevant, but I don't bring it up in work settings usually as like a disability in that respect.
Yeah, I mean, there's no right or right or wrong answers. I'm just fascinated by what people think about it. So thank you for sharing. And what would you like people who don't have anosmia to know what it's like living with it? Like, is there one thing that you wish people would just understand?
I wish that people understood that it is a real debilitating condition. There are some serious connections between anosmia and mental health, and it really should not be discredited. It's also something that is often an indicator of neurodegenerative disease, so Parkinson's, especially. And I think just people kind of think this is a larger issue, and this is, I write about this in my Undark piece, like smell does not matter. And I, as someone who's never been able to smell, I don't really know if it matters, but being able to see all these like people in the anosmia community. And, you know, I read a lot of clinical trials or not clinical trials, journal articles where it looks at like the connection between anosmia and mental health and all these other things. And it's like very clear smell does matter. You know, it's important for our sensation of food too. Like, and so, but it's just like embedded in our culture that, like, okay, like eyesight and hearing, number like one and two, respectively. And like smell is just at the bottom. And I think we really need to like think a little bit more about how important smell is to day-to-day function, and we as in everyone else, not me, because I can't smell.
Yeah, I mean, one of the things that concerns me, and I'm sure you as well, especially since you've thought about it, is what you just mentioned about neurodegenerative disorder. So we keep hearing in the literature, right? Because I think you and I read articles. And so I keep hearing, and you probably do too, like, oh, smell is linked to neurodegenerative disorders. And I'm like, okay, but what does that mean for me? Like, I'm in my 30s. I think you shared you're in your 20s. Like, are we at a higher risk of developing a neurodegenerative disorder at a younger age because we don't have a sense of smell? Or is there no connection? Like, that is a huge concern. Like, am I going to have Alzheimer's or dementia when I'm 50? I don't know. And I don't think anyone knows because when they're talking about neurodegenerative disorders and smell loss, I think they're talking about people who are in their like 60s and 70s. But like, what about us? And I don't think anyone knows, and that's frightening.
Yeah. I think something else, and this was kind of something I learned during one of my articles, I can't remember which. It's really interesting that the burden of anosmia has largely been on older populations, and that now, especially with COVID, it's going to be on a lot younger people who have more lifetime ahead of them and have to learn to live with anosmia. And so, having research that's also about like living with anosmia, using experiences from those that have done it, like myself and you, I think is also really important.
Yeah, absolutely. This next question is something you've probably thought about before, but if not, I'm curious to know if you could have a functioning sense of smell, like if someone could fix it for you today, would you want one?
I really don't know. Like I've definitely thought about it because I've never had one. I don't really know what it's like. I think I'd feel differently if I lost it. I still don't really know. And unfortunately, I don't think I'm ever going to get the chance to know. I don't think there will in my lifetime be a way to for congenital.
I almost wonder if it would be very overwhelming, like for me too. And I have acquired, so I did have a functioning sense of smell until I was about 18. And so now it's been about 14 years. And I'm wondering, like, if they could fix it, like, how would that feel? Like, how would that change my life and like my mood? And would it be very overwhelming? Like, you see those like adorable videos of babies who are deaf and then they get like a cochlear implant and they hear their parents' voice for the first time and it's like super heartwarming. I'm like, is it a similar situation for people with a sense of smell? Like, or would it just be like, this is really weird, I don't like it, turn it back
Yeah.
off?
Yeah, I am curious. And that's like another also article I'm starting to look into is there's some like the treatments for smell. It depends on like what the genesis of the condition is. I also don't know if I'm using the word genesis right, the origin, rather. And there's a study that a forthcoming study coming out on Monday from that's being presented at some conference about like stellate ganglion block, which is originally was used in cardiology. And now I guess some people are starting to look into it as a treatment for anosmia and parosmia. And so that's very interesting too, is like people who've like been on this journey for the past like 2 years of like not having a sense of smell. And like I'm curious how that goes too. Cause there are some people who've found some success, especially with COVID related.
Is this an article that you wrote?
Oh no. This is an article I'm looking into. Because there's a study. So a lot of my articles center around like scientific studies that come out. And so this is a study that is going to come out where they're basically like, this worked for some people.
Oh, I see. So
Yeah.
that's being published on Monday.
It's being presented on Monday in a conference setting. That's my
Okay.
understanding.
Fascinating. Well, you'll have to keep me posted on that because I am
Yeah.
also really interested. And a lot of like clinicians that I've mentioned stellate ganglion block to are really skeptical and they don't understand why it would have anything to do with smell. So that is really fascinating.
I,
But it seems to be helping people. So, like, what is going on there? Because are they lying? I don't think so.
yeah, like, I mean, I guess I'm on the record, so that's fine too. Is like, I'm starting to look into whether or not this actually works or not, or because I have heard similar things from clinicians. And also because it's not approved by the FDA, it's a lot of people paying out of pocket and doing this, putting a lot of energy and time and money into a condition, not a condition, a treatment that has not been clinically proven to work.
Right. Is there any last item or thing that you'd like to share with the audience?
If you ever meet me in person, please tell me if I smell because it's my biggest fear that I'm really smelly and I would like to know. Like, I don't find it rude. I make my friends tell me. I make my friends smell my clothes a lot. If you've ever lived with me, my roommates are always having to smell my stuff because I'm so stressed that I smell really bad. And I used to carry on deodorant for a long time, like in my bag without fail.
Yeah. Well, I will never tell you. You smell bad.
Okay. Thank you. I appreciate that.
You don't ever have to worry about
Yeah.
it if we're ever together again, because I will hang out with you. And even if you did, I wouldn't know. So we'd be happy buddies together. But I have that same fear too.
Yeah. I my in high school I had a boyfriend and apparently he smelled really bad and I
Oh,
had no
no.
clue. And when we broke up, all my friends were like, we have to tell you now. We didn't want to tell you at the time, but like he smells really, really bad. And that's why it was perfect for you guys. And I was like, that's funny. That's cute.
I mean, is that sweet that they waited, or like, would it wouldn't have made a difference to you, right? Like, you could have
Yeah.
said something to him.
Yeah.
That's funny.
I don't
Good
know.
to know, though. Like, oh,
Yeah.
I have a smelly guy. That's funny. So, Hannah, my last question for you is, how can listeners get connected with you online?
Yeah, I'm still somehow on, not somehow, I do like the platform formerly known as Twitter. I'm keep it on the Hannah D, no, keep it on the HDL because you have a character limit. I probably should go somewhere else, but for now I'm there.
And it's at HDL.
Keep it on the HDL. My full name is Hannah Dr. Loeb. I'm not a
Okay.
doctor. It's just a hyphenated last name, but it's long. So I often go by Hannah DL or like keep it on the Hannah DL
Okay.
or
So keep it. Okay.
keep it on
So I'll
the
have to add
HDL.
that to the
Yes.
episode notes too. Well, I want to say thank you for your time today. Thank you for chatting with me. It's
Yeah.
always great to hear from another person who's living with anosmia. So I hope you have a good rest of your day.
Thank you. You too.
Thank you to Hannah for joining me on the podcast and sharing her stories and writing her articles. Please make sure to check all of them out. I've added the links in the episode notes. Also, thanks for listening to the podcast. I really hope you enjoyed it. The goal of the show is so that you know you're not alone. If you found it helpful to you in any way, please leave a review so you can help others find the show. I have great news. There's now Smell Podcast merchandise available on the website, www.thesmellpodcast.com. I ordered myself a sweater and I can't wait until it gets here. Once it does, I'll take some pictures and put them on social media so you can check out how they look. If you're interested in rocking some gear, please visit the website to order. Until next time, have a wonderful day.